Hi, I'm Sanjay, and I'm a serial entrepreneur for the kicks, and I also invest in startups.
And I'm Shannon, a recent college grad working on building my first company.
And this is Startup Days,
the show where we take a behind-the-lens look at starting and growing a company from the perspective of founders and investors.
Welcome to another episode of Startup Days. Today we've got Daniel Roberts from Friendly Human, founder of Friendly Human, with us today. Welcome to the podcast, Daniel.
Thanks so much.
So let's get started. I'm sure a lot of people know what you guys do. Let's first talk about what Friendly Human is, and then let's talk about your background. So what is Friendly Human?
Friendly Human is a kind of video and social first digital agency here in Atlanta. And, you know, Friendly Human exists to create authentic human relationships. And we do that through a variety of ways and love finding new and innovative ways to bring people together through media and video and photography and all that. Yeah. I love the fact that we're photographers, not painters. So what we deal in is reality.
I like that. We're photographers, not painters. So you tell the story as it is, not as somebody wants it to be told.
Exactly. But in the best light possible.
In the best light possible. Absolutely. Sure. So let's talk about your background. Where are you from? Where are you born and raised?
Born in Missouri, quickly moved to Houston my first year, and then been here in Atlanta since I was seven. So kind of Atlanta is where I was raised.
Okay, so you'd consider Atlanta home.
Oh, for sure.
At this point.
Absolutely.
How much time in Missouri?
Less than a year.
Oh, okay.
But
so you don't
remember.
I would
always go up there for summers and stuff. All my mom's family's still up there, but
in
St. Louis. So.
St. Louis or somewhere else?
St. Louis, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. You've ever been up the Arch?
I have once.
Yeah.
So it's terrifying.
Is that terrifying? Is it a one and done thing? I've been up it once.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's changed. We've been there.
Well, you know, it's funny.
They have City Museum, which is amazing.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. So it's an artist there. Took a old building, kind of like Pond City Market here in Atlanta, just huge, massive warehouse, multi-stores, floors, and turned it into an adult-sized McDonald's Playland.
That sounds awesome.
So you're required to have fun when you're there.
I think that is going to require a road trip. We got to figure out a way to have that be a business road trip there. Absolutely.
Sounds good.
So how is it that you got involved into photography, video, all this stuff that you do now? Like what sparked that passion?
Great question. My uncle was a newspaper photographer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And when I was six years old, he taught me how to use his, it wasn't even a DSLR back then. It was just a very analog single lens reflex camera and how to focus it and use that. Fell in love with photography. By the time I was 9 or 10, I could process color film. And then in middle school, got into video and went to my undergrad's in network security, but I paid my way through school by doing lighting design and directing for TV.
I had no idea it was in network security. That's
totally
not what you do now.
I absolutely love it, though. It is and it isn't. I always joke, I was really good at the social engineering side, so I was always better at hacking the people than the hardware, so it was more of this like, hey, why don't I go be a marketer?
Yeah. So it's funny. So so your roots are in kind of the analog photography and all that stuff, but now you do everything digital, right? Do you do anything analog?
Just for fun, honestly. Occasionally, I'll pull one of my old cameras out, and I've kind of got a collection of old film cameras. And I always want to. The thing that I miss about back then was you had to take the picture. I mean, I remember having it was 37 cents every time I hit the shutter,
right?
Because you got to get it developed and all that. And then so you'd have a notebook because it would be a month before you'd see the picture you just took. I think it makes you a much better photographer or cinematographer today because you have to remember all that, record all that data. What does it look like at F4 versus F2.8 or whatever?
So, yeah. You think which one makes you better? The one where you didn't see it for
when you
weeks?
Didn't see it. Because, I mean, it gives you the opportunity to have to be better. Like, you can kind of phone it in and not just learn either way.
Just click a bunch of times and one of them will
be
good.
Right, exactly. But with that, if you're going to be good, it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Hey, do you find like a challenge now with, I mean, I'm sure you guys have just terabytes and terabytes worth of film. Like,
we've got a third of a petabyte.
We're not even going to talk in terabytes anymore. And just managing that and being able to find the things, right? Like I remember, you know, my parents, you had the boxes of photographs and they were all sorted and cataloged and everything. And now personally, we're just overwhelmed with even how many photos we take inside the family.
Absolutely. So I am very fortunate to have an amazing COO and best friend who is all about process. And we have a flawless sort of archival system, so we don't ever throw anything away. That's one of the reasons our storage is so large. So if a client needs something years later, we still have it.
Wow.
But at the same time, yeah, we can. Everything's organized by client, by project, by timeline, whenever the project was shot and sold and
right.
all that. So we can find it however we need to.
So I'm just realizing, so we met many years ago when you did work with me on Startup Riot.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the footage from Startup Riot is still sitting somewhere on a disk.
Yep.
I'm presuming a disk.
Yep.
Somewhere within Friendly Human.
Exactly.
Wow. So, that's kind of weird. The event is gone, and yet the footage lives on
yep.
at your guys' place.
So,
so you guys have kind of morphed over time. And by the way, I don't think we've mentioned it yet, but your tagline has been, "We shoot people," which
mm-hmm.
I absolutely love and really defines kind of what y'all have done in the past. You guys have changed over time. And what has kind of facilitated some of that change? Like, let's talk about some of the hard times or the good times that mm-hmm. have said, hey, let's reinvent ourselves because of this.
Yeah. So I think part of it is that I get to go to work every day with a group of people who love a good challenge. And that never getting complacent, never getting comfortable in the work that you're doing, and always like finding things that'll scare you a little bit. So that's been part of it, and it's just been fun to evolve as a company. Like before even you knew Friendly Human, the first 6 months, I was actually trying to do like a video product of sorts and just was way in over my head.
Yeah.
And
So a product that you would sell.
Right, like exactly.
Okay.
Like a pre-produced kind of video series. And yeah, just did not have the capital for it. Was basically homeless at the time. My wife and I live in my parents' basement. It was 2008. I got laid off 3 weeks before the wedding. She moved here from Chattanooga, so she'd already given notice. And it's like, well, honey, like we can take as long of a honeymoon as we want. We just can't spend any money on it. And so it was kind of interesting in those first 6 months of Friendly Human to do that, and then kind of pivoted. Or I love Mark Andreessen. Calls them F-ups. I think that's what a pivot is. But so I had one of those and then decided to start sponsoring, kind of doing what we do now and sponsoring events.
Right.
And
that's how we met.
Reached out to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was looking at that email this morning.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
And it's amazing. 10 years later, right?
Yep.
At this point.
Exactly.
And so the company is still around. It's grown. How many folks are you guys now?
10 full-time people.
Wow.
So that's been part of the change. So you asked what was some of that path? We started as a video production company, just straight up.
Right.
But as we've turned into more of an agency doing that consulting and the strategy side of our work, it's been great to be able to grow past. There's very certain limitations on video production as far as how big of a team you can grow. We were already, I went to a conference last year with 100 different video production companies, and we were already the largest one there at 9 people at the time.
Wow.
So it's kind of not very encouraging when you own the video production company. But what we do now has opened up a lot more doors, and I think to even grow a larger video production side of what we do.
Yeah. So you're a first-time founder doing
first,
this, right?
Yeah.
What are some of the things that have happened that have been a challenge that you maybe didn't expect or did expect, and kind of how do you feel about some of those things?
That's a great question. It is the highest highs and the lowest lows.
Right.
I can say some of the things that I didn't
expect. And the highs are easy, right? Everybody wants to party around the highs. So what about the lows? Like, how do you get through those lows?
I remember one time I had a key employee. Our retention has just been, I've been very lucky to have people that just love working at Friendly Human and a lot of trust and stuff. But we had this one time, one of our people got poached, and they tell me, and it was a key employee. We were super leveraged at the time. We were like, I believe we grow through taking big risks, and we were right in the middle of one of those, and it was just not a good time, right? And the chairman of my board at the time, his son was having open heart surgery that day. So couldn't call him. I was like, I'm going to not do that. But I remember I ended up calling someone else on our board, and I'll give him a shout out because I really appreciate it. It was Kenji Kurimoto from
Kenji's awesome.
Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah. And so I call him. I didn't know he was in an EO Entrepreneurs Organization event in Thailand at the time.
Oh, wow.
So it's like 5 a.m. and he listens to my voicemail, doesn't have reception with his phone, but he has Wi-Fi. So he gets dressed and goes downstairs to the lobby where the Wi-Fi is better at 5 a.m. in Thailand to have a call with me about, like, everything's going to be okay. Don't worry. Like, we'll get through this together.
Yeah.
And I think it's having those people who support you and doing everything you can just to say thank you to them back.
Yeah. And by the way, I think that's typical Kenji.
Absolutely.
He's a good friend as well. And he's just an incredible founder and great for the Atlanta community. So you've kind of struggled through some of these things. There's been ups and downs. Like, what's the fun side of this? Like, what do you really love? I know you guys did a documentary. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So Rhino Man, it is about to come out finally.
Is
after
it?
Two
okay.
years.
Yeah. I didn't know where we were in the process.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So just had a team get back last Monday.
So tell us a little bit about the background story of what this is about.
So one of my producers is from South Africa. He was a ranger trainer in Kruger National Park and just an amazing guy. But so the field rangers over there are kind of like our park rangers here. Except for here, nobody's trying to poach the animals like they are with rhino horn. So rhino horn's the most expensive substance on planet at street value, about $400,000 a kilo. And it is just a huge epidemic. There's about 4,000 rhino left in the wild, and they're quickly dwindling. Eight are poached every day. And so that number's actually gone down a little bit. And so, like, we're doing a documentary on these people that come from the communities, get paid almost nothing, and risk their lives every day to protect these rhinos. And they're these field rangers in the national parks of South Africa.
Yeah. So how long was the process of telling this story? Like, you guys have been there. I mean, we've been talking about it I feel like it's been a long time now.
Exactly, yeah. So almost 3 years ago now, we heard about Matt, before he was even working at Friendly Human, his producer was over there, and he had a nonprofit, and he was trying to raise money, and would we come to a Kickstarter if he paid our way over there? Absolutely, sounds like a great cause, and gotten introduced to him. And so we were just doing this little pro bono project. Well, the team comes back, and the stories were some of the most powerful I've ever heard. So one thing about these rangers is oftentimes they're 2, 3, 4 hours away from their family. They'll work 6 weeks on, 1 week off. And so they said that, you know, it's not uncommon or unheard of that you'll get a call on your cell phone from an unknown number, and it'll say, hey, when you're on patrol today, if you turn left, you'll get, there'll be $1,000 on your front porch tomorrow, which is 2 months' pay. If you turn right, your daughter's walking home from school right now. She's wearing a blue dress with yellow flowers on it. And so what do you do in those situations? Like, you're 6 hours away from your family, and there's just so much intimidation. And even this one ranger that we're kind of featuring in the movie, he won Ranger of the Year for all of South Africa and yet was framed for some stuff in the past and was exonerated for it. But still got his house torn apart and all that kind of stuff. And just so much intimidation going on. So really powerful human connections.
Yeah. So you guys have been working on this now for 3+ years.
Yeah.
We're about to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Where are people going to be able to see it?
So we're entering it in Sundance, which is harder to get into than Y Combinator. Let me just put that in perspective. It's about 16,000-17,000 people apply every year, and about 80 get in.
Wow.
So yeah.
Also, I don't go to Sundance. So where can we see it outside of Sundance, possibly?
The end goal is, of course, Netflix, Amazon, some kind of online
streaming,
distribution.
Yeah. Some kind of place like that.
Our real goal is just that as many people see it as possible.
Right.
If I break even, I'll be thrilled.
Yeah. And is this something you guys have funded yourself, or was there outside? Oh, so you guys have funded all the work behind this.
That's been part of the 2 years, so it's been a lot of fun. But
so you've done it as you've been able to, basically, like fitting it in with clients and everything else like that.
Yep.
Being able to scrape together some money to pay for things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember you were excited about one toy that you were able to get too. You got a big giant drone for filming. Right?
Yeah.
Did that actually happen, or?
Yeah, we've actually just recently upgraded it to a new one.
Okay.
A lot of my team is FAA certified and stuff, so that's kind of fun. And
This flew around in Africa, kind of tracking the rhinos and getting footage that way.
Exactly. And just beautiful shots of, you know, a herd of zebra running across the field and stuff. So,
okay. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing this movie at some point.
So you can go to rhinomanthemovie.com and actually watch the trailer and stuff now. So
oh, okay.
That's already
rhinomanthemovie.com.
Exactly.
Okay. So listeners, write that down. Go to that that page. If you've got any kind of sway with Sundance, there you go as well. So what's next then for y'all? Is it Rhino Man's done now? Is there another documentary you guys are eyeing that you might want to produce now as a fun side project?
I think there will always be fun side projects. One thing we're working on right now and concentrating on is how can we take the idea of what it means to be a friendly human and kind of promote that message out there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting for this very much a B2B kind of company, kind of taking on this B2C side of things of how can we create more human connections in the world.
Right.
And encourage people to do that, get outside of their comfort zone, meet new people, all of that.
I just realized, like, where did you come up with the name Friendly Human? Like, is that a Southern thing, do you think? Because, you know, I feel like people in the South, they're friendly. I mean, that's kind of what we're known for, right? Is that why you've reflected that name in the name of the company?
We could say that.
Something else.
Or it's the fact that, about 6 months before I started Friendly Human, I was looking back. I was fortunate enough to work for someone who was anything but friendly or human. And it was.
And we're
just,
not going to name them.
And so, we're not going to name them.
Okay.
But you know who you are. No. But it was the kind of person who would lie to you to make you feel bad about yourself. Like, I mean, you know, truly, like, I don't say that lightly. And so I think it was this desire to build a different kind of company.
Right.
It was the whole conversation of corporate personhood and Citizens United was huge at the time.
Right.
And it was like, I had this idea of, okay, so if companies want to be people, what would it look like for a company's brand to be personified as like what if people could be companies? What would it look like if Jesus Gandhi or Mr. Rogers was a company? How would that company operate? And that was kind of where Friendly Human came from.
Okay.
And the domain was available. I was sitting in the middle of 75, and it was a $7 hand-signed domain. So
there you go. That's almost always the key for a good name for a company is the domain available. So let's talk. I think you touched upon this a little bit ago. Talk about culture a little bit. Like, what do you think about in terms of company culture? And you say that you know, you're fortunate that people like working for Friendly Human. Mm-hmm. But they actually don't like working for Friendly Human. They like working for within the culture that you've built. So what is it that you've done within the culture of Friendly Human to make it like that?
Yeah, I think business is really simple. It's never easy. But I think it comes down to making great promises and then keeping them. And if you do those two things, like, you'll win. So, you know, I don't want to oversimplify it, but, like, I think you have a great culture by having a great culture, by choosing to at those kind of choke points where, you know, you've got two options and one's way easier than the other. So to give a relevant example, right now we've got an employee. So basically the first 4 years of Friendly Human, I freelanced under the name. And then
it was just you.
2013, yeah. I started. We moved into the Tech Village the first week they were open and started growing it and adding people. And so my first employee started out as an intern. And he just hit 5 years. So I've always said that after 5 years, you get a one-month sabbatical.
Uh-huh.
And so him and his girlfriend are currently somewhere in Colorado cycling across the U.S.
Oh, that's awesome.
Awesome. We really needed him this summer, right? And hopefully he'll never hear this. I don't want him to feel bad. But it was just it was great having that conversation with my leadership team of like, okay, are we going to tell him he needs to postpone the sabbatical? Like, you know, I don't think not doing it was ever an option. But we're just like, no, like, you know, like, it's been 5 years. This is what we said. We're going to stick to it.
Right.
And so I think that's part of it. But yeah, and then.
Well, hopefully he does hear this because I think that shows that, you know, you're going to live up to your promises.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I just wouldn't want him feeling bad about
no.
abandoning us in the middle of the summer. Nick, are you listening to me right now?
So have there been other times like that where you've made those promises and it's been hard to keep? Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like, how have you worked through that? Because, you know, there's obviously like this summer, you needed this this team member and they weren't available and it was probably painful on the rest of your team. So how do you square those two things, like the business needs versus these sometimes altruistic promises that you're making?
So I think one beautiful example is how Matt, the producer from South Africa, came to work with us. And so we're very committed to having this culture. So at the same time that that one employee that we had talked about before had gotten poached, they had kind of an understudy that wasn't working out. And it was an account director position at the time. And just was a fine person, but just wasn't a good fit for the company. And but, you know, I don't know that much about the agency world, but I'm pretty sure you have to have at least one account director, right? Like somebody has to manage the clients. Like,
right.
And so we were kind of stuck and we were like, what are we going to do? And basically I announced that this other person was leaving and told the whole team. And then this kind of understudy came to me that same day and was like, you're doing everything wrong. They'd been there a month. You're doing everything wrong. You need me. And, you know, what we agreed to for my pay isn't working out. I need you to increase it by a good bit. I was like, this is not a good feeling, right? And
yeah.
Just feeling stuck and tough afternoon. I'll never forget that. So the next morning at like 7:30, me and my COO are early risers. So we, you know, we're talking like, what are we going to do? Like, I guess we'll have to have this person around for the next few months, add some more people, transition them out. Like, you know, kind of the typical kind of business route. But I think when you're committed to something, then necessity is the mother of invention. And so to Justin's credit, he was like, well, we've been working on this Rhino documentary thing with this Matt fellow. He's up in Michigan at this time in grad school. He was just, it was like May or so. He's just graduating. And he's like, what about Matt for a producer? He's already producing like the documentary. And I was like, yes. So literally 5 minutes later, we're calling him up at 8 o'clock in the morning in Michigan. And we're like, hey, man, like, what do you think about coming to be a producer? And I'll never forget this kind of South African accent of like, holy shit, you mean I get to be a friendly human? It's just like, perfect. And he's been with us ever since. And I think that went a little British right there. But yeah, anyway. Yeah, he's awesome.
You know, Brits settled in South
Africa. He embodies our culture as much as any of our employees.
Yeah.
And I think it was sticking with that, even though, like, I don't know what we're going to do, but we have to do something. We have to be true to our culture.
Yeah.
And being selfless and all those kind of things. So.
Yeah. So what's the next horizon? Like, where do you see Friendly Human in like 5 years, 10 years? You know, how do you manage the culture going from 9 people to, or 10 people to whatever number
1 million.
It becomes? 1 million people.
1 million people.
All the humans.
All the humans.
All the friendly humans.
No, I think we just keep doing things that don't scale. Like, it's a popular thing in the startup world to say, like, oh, early on, do things that don't scale. I think you always ought to do things that don't scale.
Yeah.
And you may have to do them at a team level instead of a company level.
That's kind of your job, right? Like, video editing, how are you going to make that scale? Somebody's
exactly.
got to do it. A human has to do that.
Yeah, but if you break it down to the team level and, you know, people can only remember so many names and interact with so many people and be involved in their lives, so that kind of splits it up for you and just have all those teams that overlap each other and know each other and stuff. So,
yeah. Okay. So one last question for you.
Uh-huh.
What's your one big piece of advice for any founder out there, either a repeat founder or more importantly, a first time founder? Like, what should they know? What should they do? What should they think about as they're making the plunge or just before they're making the plunge into being a founder?
I think my biggest piece of advice is, as I'm, you know, now years into this, is go as far as you can, as fast as you can. Like, there is no win like an early win. There's no money as expensive as early money, for sure, from a cash standpoint. But at the same time, like, when you're young, when you're just starting out, the momentum and that is so important to ride that way. We were really fortunate to. And that's my biggest piece of advice.
Yeah. Go as far as you can, as fast as you can, by yourself or with a team?
Did I say go as far? Go as far as you can, as young as you can.
As young as you can. Okay.
Yeah.
As far as you can,
so,
as young as you can.
I have,
but is that with
I
a team
theory that,
or by yourself?
Oh, with a team, for sure. Absolutely with a team.
Because you did it by yourself for the first few years, right? The first 4 years.
That
of
was
human.
Me just getting to the point where I could afford a second human being. I mean,
okay.
When we started the company, I had $3,700 in the bank account and the camera was $3,200. And my wife said, go for it.
Wow.
So, to her credit. And those first few years, I made our revenues the first year were $18,000. Then 31K, and that was including like buying gear during that time and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So I just didn't know anybody. I didn't have a clue about business. I listened to 50 audio books a year for those first Well, I still do, but but especially in those first years, it was so key. And you know, I had a zero to start with, and I had to get to at least a point where I could. My first employee, I told them, "Here's what I can pay you. Here's what I want to pay you. I'm not going to pay myself more than you until we both reach this goal together."
Yeah.
And so that was kind of where that started. And so that was the first 4 years, was just building up enough clients and enough knowledge of how to run a business to even hire someone.
Yeah. How transparent have you been, and were you and are you still with your employees on the numbers and all that stuff?
Oh, you just asked the right question.
I said the previous question was the last question, but now you've kind of piqued my curiosity.
So a year ago, we went to there's an amazing book called Great Game of Business. And it's all around gamifying business and completely open book management. So my most junior, you know, video editor, for example, can tell you all of the numbers for the company every single week. Every Monday morning, we sit down and we go through all of our expenses, all of our, you know, revenue and all that kind of stuff, and earned revenue. So we really look at how much value did we add to our clients this week? How much, you know, not just did we sell a new project, but or did we get cash in the bank, but how much value in the world did we create? And that's what we track for that. And of course, at a higher level, we keep an eye on cash flow and stuff. But yeah, that's just been amazing. And then we're all incentivized around that. So if we win together. I give up about a third of the profits of the company.
Back to the employees.
Back to the employees. Okay. So it's been awesome.
Okay. Okay, Daniel, thanks a lot for being on the podcast. We appreciate all of your stories. So listeners, rhinomanmovie.com for the movie, friendlyhuman.com. If you want to use Daniel's awesome team, and I speak from experience, they did work for me at Startup Riot for a couple of Startup Riots. I don't know how many Startup Riots. How many Startup Riots did
like
you do with
four
us?
Four or five, I think. Yeah, I don't know how many there were.
Yeah, I don't remember how many there were at this point. It feels like almost every single one. And I remember the very last one. These guys came in hot.
That was
they came
day.
In within so much gear. My eyes were popping out of my head how much gear Daniel and Posse brought to the game. And I think the results were outstanding, as always. So thanks again for telling your story, Daniel. And listeners, we'll catch you next time.
Thanks so much.